U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Hello and welcome to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Bill McGurn, filling in for Paul Jagot. With me today are the two brightest colleagues on the editorial page, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Bill. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Kyle Peterson.
Hello, hello.
Okay, why don't we start off with the pending news, the South Carolina primary tomorrow, and Joe Biden's kind of rise in the polls. It's really, Kim, it's really quite extraordinary. I was looking at some of the polls. There's a poll out today where he's up 16, I think, or no, up 9 points today. But there was a poll yesterday from Emerson where he's up 16 and one where he was up 20 in a Monmouth poll. So, he must be doing something right now. And that follows a slide that he sort of had before.
Well, I think what you're seeing is a fruition of Joe Biden's strategy, which was after a pretty bad flame out in Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada, even all the way back in New Hampshire, he was deciding that he was going to really throw his resources at South Carolina, in part because he's got a decent standing with and a long history with the African-American community there, which is a big part of that vote. He got a big boost this week by getting the endorsement of Jim Clyburn, the representative from South Carolina, who is the dean of politics down there. And that counts for a lot, especially among African-American voters. So I think you're seeing the reflection of that. The question for me is, does that rise there and would a victory there translate into some real momentum for Joe in the Super Tuesday primaries?
Right. That's the big question. Kyle, one of the point Kim made, the African-American vote is disproportionately strong in South Carolina. But the larger thing is not just South Carolina. It's hard to imagine a Democrat defeating Donald Trump without a large turnout from the African-American community. I mean, Mrs. Clinton didn't really get it. And that's Joe's great claim to fame, right, among the other candidates. And most of the other candidates are relatively weak when it comes to African-American support. It's not clear, for example, if he fell out, who would pick it up. It looked for a while like Mike Bloomberg might get some of it, but his apology on Stop and Frisk and the attacks on him in the primaries shows that he's kind of vulnerable on that. So, I mean, it's a reasonable calculation. In other words, it's far more important than just South Carolina.
Yeah. So just to give a sense of the figures, in the 2016 Democratic primary, if you look at the exit polls, 61% of the vote was African-American. And that is an audience that Joe Biden knows how to connect with. Another thing that I think is at play here is just that there's been there's been no other alternative non-Bernie Sanders candidate that has emerged to take the mantle from him. And I think that, Bernie Sanders having racked up some pretty good delegate numbers, I think that moderate Democrats are also trying to figure out where they're going to coalesce. I mean, Biden had a pretty decent performance, in the most recent debate. He announced that the day after that was his best fundraising day so far. He raised $1.2 million in that 24 hours. And so those two things, I think, are tailwinds as he goes into South Carolina. What happens after that, I think, depends on how big of a win he gets. So he has said that, even winning by 1 point is enough. And obviously, that's true from a mathematical standpoint. But he needs to
horseshoes
rack up
and hand grenades.
Right. He needs to rack up a bigger number than that, I think, to make a difference. I mean, looking at some of the Super Tuesday states, so I checked the polls this morning, and the biggest delegate prize is California, and Bernie Sanders is way ahead there. But just right behind that is Texas, and Sanders is up by 2 points. Right. North Carolina, he's up by 1 point. So if Joe Biden goes into South Carolina and comes out of it with a big victory, I mean, he could be in a position to sweep the South on Super Tuesday.
Right. Kim, isn't that the real question with South Carolina? I mean, I think if Joe Biden loses, for example, and maybe all over, right? If Bernie Sanders were to win, It's hard to see what would stop him after that. But if Joe Biden either won a small victory, as Kim said, I mean, as Kyle said, or a large victory, it gives him the wherewithal to go on. But 3 days later, I mean, he's not really impressing anyone in these polls in these states. I mean, what does a firewall do if 3 days later you're in this huge contest and you're kind of an also-ran in those contests?
Yeah, that's why I was saying that I think it's going to be more interesting, not how Joe Biden fares in South Carolina, but how he fares 3 days later on Super Tuesday. Because as Kyle says, if he comes out of this with a big victory, a commanding victory, you know, maybe that really gets him another look. And maybe it creates the narrative that Joe Biden truly is the alternative to Bernie Sanders. And you begin to see voters making that choice, because this is the problem right now for those Democrats worried about Sanders and his momentum, is that everyone's splitting the vote on the other side. No one has stepped up and made the case convincingly that they should be the true alternative. So let's say he does great in South Carolina. Let's say that that gives him a boost in some of these key states. And let's say that after Super Tuesday, if he has a good showing, you see the ultimate dropout of a Klobuchar or maybe a Buttigieg or maybe an Elizabeth Warren. Does that help consolidate the vote and make this more of a two-man race?
Right. Kyle, what Kim's pointing to about the moderates coalescing around a candidate, you know, so often you hear they should agree on one candidate and go ahead. That's not the way politics works. If they're all, you know, between 15% and 25%, they all look at and say, why should I step down? Why don't you step down? I mean, there's no incentive, you know, unless you're beaten. That said, if some of these people don't do well, I'm thinking Amy Klobuchar, even maybe Pete Buttigieg, on Super Tuesday, do they have the wherewithal to go out? I mean, it may not be decided just by the voters, but by donors. Do they have any money to go on? I would think that there will be some winnowing after Super Tuesday. Maybe it's Elizabeth Warren. Maybe it's Amy Klobuchar. Maybe, again, it's even Pete Buttigieg, or maybe Tom Steyer decides to drop out. But usually, you know, for all the talk about a contested convention, usually that takes care of itself by people losing and dropping out.
Yeah, and there's some local interests that play too. I mean, Amy Klobuchar, Minnesota is her state, and that's a Super Tuesday state, and she's right. Been leading in the polls there. So you can understand why she wants to.
It makes sense for most of them to stay in, at least to see how they really fare, right?
Right. She wants to give her local voters also a good show. But yeah, I think the donor question becomes a big issue after Super Tuesday, because then the campaign sort of fractures again into a whole bunch of different places, and it takes real money to compete in those places. I mean, the one guy that this does not apply to, though, is Mike Bloomberg. And he is saying that, you know, whatever it takes, if he has any chance to win the nomination, he's going to stick it out all the way through. And so that is a wrench in the works if you're Joe Biden, because, I mean, what he needs is to be this consensus candidate where voters coalesce. And if there's another guy who has no monetary constraints and can keep fighting him for that slot all the way down the road, I mean, who knows how that could turn out?
Okay, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Hello, we're back with Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal. We've been talking about Joe Biden's recent surge in the polls in South Carolina. And Kim, I want to ask you two last questions unrelated about that. One is Kyle brought up Bloomberg, but it seems to me Bloomberg, he had a so-so performance the last time, wasn't as disastrous. But the gap between the Mike Bloomberg that you see on his feet debating and the Bloomberg you see with the ads suggests a little trouble. And he's been kind of dropping. You know, he had a pre-debate surge in South Carolina, and he seems to be dropping. I just don't know how viable he's going to be if he continues to turn in performances. And then the other part I wanted to ask you about 538, the website, was saying that one of Biden's vulnerabilities is the under 45 vote. They're not interested in nostalgia for the Obama administration. They're not impressed by the resume. You know, I came in after Watergate and so forth. So a lot of his strengths don't really appeal to them. And they're saying that could really kill Joe Biden.
Well, on the Bloomberg point, I think Kyle just put his finger on something very important, which is if you look at the polls out in these Super Tuesday states, which is going to be obviously the first place that Bloomberg is actually on the ballot. He's up there, right? Like he's got some states where he's right. In third, or he's in double digit support, but he hasn't broken through. And the entire bet of the Bloomberg candidacy was that you go out there and you operate in these states where the other candidates hadn't had the time nor the money to really do because they were busy with Iowa and New Hampshire, and you build up some real leads, and you do it with an enormous amount of advertising and by buying up all of this staff and et cetera. He's not really doing that. And so you get this interesting question. If he only kind of trails in at third place in all of these states, but he gets some delegates. If you're Mike Bloomberg and you've already spent $500 million, do you just get out? It would seem to make sense, but I'm not really sure that is the way Mike Bloomberg operates. And so you could have this fascinating question where all of these kind of other candidates that have been running for a year, they decide to pull the plug. And the guy who kind of came in late becomes the reason that you don't have a clear alternative to Bernie Sanders. So we'll see where that goes. Biden and the youth vote, look, a lot of these candidates other than Bernie are having a little bit of trouble with it. I mean, and that also gets to the ideological rift in the Democratic Party. A lot of younger voters, if you look at the polls, are simply more on the page of the kind of progressive politics. So it's not just that they don't really get a lot of the things that Biden is talking about. They actually actively prefer the policies and agenda of a Bernie Sanders.
Right. Who's more exciting? Again, before we move to our next topic, one last thing, Kyle, on this. It strikes me, Bloomberg's kind of bet is for unless he really breaks out on Super Tuesday, a brokered convention. And it just strikes me that though he might be the better candidate to present a moderate face to the American people, if Bernie Sanders went into the convention with a plurality, the most votes, but not enough to win, and it was given to Mike Bloomberg, I just think that would roil the Democratic Party. And I'm not sure that the Bernie supporters, which would be a chunk of the party, would actually rally around the Democratic candidate. I mean, that's a big risk, it would seem.
It is a good question. And on the debate stage, his competitors are attacking Mike Bloomberg as this former Republican. And I mean, I agree. It seems to me that if there were a brokered convention and if it came down it was deadlocked and Bernie Sanders could not put together a majority, I do think that they could find somebody who would be more of a consensus candidate, whether that would be one of the candidates, other candidates who's currently in the race and would have dropped out by then. But also we got to keep in mind that there's a lot of ifs that get there before we even start thinking about that. I mean, the brokered convention is what people who like politics love to kind of talk about, but there's a reason that it doesn't ever get there, at least not in modern times. I mean, to get any delegates in these states, you have to have 15% of the vote. And so that is something that's a factor that really helps the front runners.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the coronavirus. The other seems to be big political issue now. I have lots of friends in Hong Kong where I lived for 10 years, so I'm quite interested in this. And it seems to me that the modest answer is the best. We don't know. We don't know exactly how contagious or lethal it is and what you can do about it. But I think that one of the things, Kim, it just strikes me that's lost in this is that we do have an excellent public health system, and we do have a strong private sector in healthcare with lots of incentives to solve this. I mean, I have no doubt that they will come up with some kind of fine. The Israelis, I think, say they're 3 weeks away. But that seems to be lost in all the scaremongering over it.
Right. If you really want to terrify yourself, turn on CNN for an hour. I did it as an experiment yesterday and vowed I would not do that again as I was reaching for face masks and, entire bottles of Airborne. But, not only do we have a great public health sector and a great private health sector, but ones that have done a really good job so far. And that's also been lost. If you look at all of these outbreaks, and I'm not saying that we won't have more right. of a spread here in the United States. The CDC has suggested that may happen. But we have done a really good job so far of repatriating these Americans that were stranded in countries where the virus had had the outbreak, of the cruise ships, of the handling right now of this woman in California who may be, we still don't know, the first example of a community spread infection.
Right.
But we're tracking these things down. We're on top of it. We seem to have the right supplies. We know what we're doing. And that again has been lost. And I think also overshadowed by irresponsible media coverage and also irresponsible politicking in Washington, in particular by Democrats who seem to be rooting for this to go badly.
Yeah, Kyle, I want to ask you about that. But again, to Kim's point, I mean, not only is our health system excellent, but when you compare it with other nations, I lived abroad in a couple of different countries, and there's no comparison. I mean, one of the big problems with the coronavirus is no one trusts China, right? The guy that found this and said this is going to be a problem got a visit from the police department that told him to shut up. It's not a place that encourages the free flow of information. So part of the thing that's roiling markets is you just don't know if China's telling us the truth about any of this stuff. You know, they don't have a history. And even Italy, no one trusts the Italian government to do what we can do in terms of marshaling resources and coming up with answers and so forth. But to Kim's point about the politics of it, let me read from, just bear with me, from an editorial we ran today. It says, in the 48 hours before Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer called for an end to name-calling, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez mocked Vice President Mike Pence, named by President Trump to lead the government's response, as a science denier. Elizabeth Warren tweeted that the administration's, quote, bungled response to the coronavirus outbreak is a mess. Mike Bloomberg, the self-described adult in the room, chimed in that leadership is, quote, sharing the facts, demonstrating control, and trusting the experts. Unfortunately, not Trump's strong suite. Is this what Kim's talking about? I mean, is it possible to have a scientific, cold, rational approach to this and come together? Or is this, I guess what I'm asking, is this the new Russia?
Well, I mean, it's difficult. This is the way that Washington works. I'll read a little bit more from an Associated Press fact check. This was fact checking some comments. So one of them was from Joe Biden, who's saying, you know, in the Obama administration, we increased the budget of the CDC. We increased the NIH budget. He wiped all that out. And the Associated Press is saying, well, you know, I mean, there were some cuts in the president's budget proposal, but the president's budget proposal was never enacted. So those cuts didn't take effect. I mean, it's regrettable that you see that everybody, I mean, it's a presidential election year. Everybody is looking for an angle to score a political point. But something you said a few minutes ago is this, it's still really early. I mean, Congress is working on some funding and it may be too early to know whether the right number is $2 billion or $5 billion. But that isn't stopping anybody from trying to make it into a political issue already.
Right. And Kim, I think the Trump administration signaled they'd be willing to consider more congressional spending, you know, to get something out there quickly rather than haggle over. But they do have a legitimate concern that people take advantage of these crises to put all sorts of spending through, included through, that has nothing to do with the problem at hand, right? I mean, that's a legitimate concern in any of—
Of course they do. And that's why, look, I think when they first came out with their proposal, $2.5 billion, and I did some reporting on this, I mean, it was a very—it was a responsible number. It was based on the requests that the administration had received from the agencies that are on the front lines of this. And they said, this is what we need. And the administration said, okay, that equals about $2.5 billion. A lot of it on vaccine production and purchase, stockpiling of important gear, getting money to the CDC, which has been doing all of this exfiltration and quarantining of individuals and testing. But, you know, the Democrats immediately jumped on that and tried to make it into a political issue and said, you're not taking this seriously enough. The number needs to be much larger. And that put the White House in a difficult position, because you want to call them out for what is clear opportunism. At the same time, you risk playing into their hands and indeed looking as though you're not taking, you know, paying enough attention to this. And so I thought the president handled it very well. We should all care about deficits. But in this particular case, he's like, look, they want to give me more money. We'll take it. We'll use it wisely. This is a first, by the way. They never want to give me more money. He kind of made light of it, but I think he diffused that situation as a result.
Well, I want to ask you particularly about one of the things you brought up, the Democrats' response. I don't want to get the person in trouble, but I was on a Fox clip, and the Democrat on the panel immediately said, Mike Pence doesn't believe in science. You know, he believes we should pray over. I mean, it's just a caricature. But I was stunned last night. I was watching the news. You mentioned CNN, but I was flipping all over. And I saw the same line repeated over and over again. I mean, this seems ridiculous. That's not an argument, right?
By the way, I saw that clip. You did very well. But no, look, this is a deliberate mischaracterization of what the president has tasked Mike Pence to do. And that's why it's such an unsavory tactic.
Right.
The president is asking Mr. Pence to be the person who filters all the information up to him and has a unified message coming out of the White House about how we're handling with a crisis that is changing on a day-to-day basis. You need somebody like that. He's not asking Mike Pence to put on his lab coat and then go in and do all the testing, you know, for the next round of coronavirus vaccine. We have capable officials who are doing all that. And obviously Anthony Fauci, the head health official, he is the person that's taking the lead. No one's keeping him from giving his press conferences. This is just meant to make sure that at a time of a potential crisis or emergency, that the administration is getting one message out to Americans about how to handle it.
Yeah, and I would say, as someone that worked in a White House, when you put the vice president in charge, it brings a lot of heft to it, as opposed to someone else, you know, someone that does have some pull in a White House. So I think that's that's a good thing. Kyle, what I'd like to see, I mean, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I'd like to see someone say, lay out what we don't know and why it's important. I mean, we've had some cases, I think, in Japan where people have been cleared of the virus and then the symptoms came back, right? So we don't know about that. We have one reported case of someone who was not in contact with anyone from Wuhan who has it. We don't know whether it'll survive the warm season, you know, whether it'll go away. I mean, I would like to see someone say, these are the questions we need answers to that the scientists are working on now, and have a little modesty and give people a little awareness of what we're trying to find out. We're still trying to adequately trace it back and find out where it started and how it seemed to move from animals to humans and so forth, and what we can do to stop that.
Well, and one of the other problems, it seems to me, is that, not to go Donald Rumsfeld, but that we don't know what we don't know sometimes. I mean, one of the issues, they've talked about the mortality rates of this being, you know, something like 2% to 3%, but that also depends on how many low-grade cases are flying under the radar. And particularly, you know, with the data coming out of countries like China or Iran, you're not really sure. I mean, the countries where it has spread more widely than it has here, so they would theoretically have more data to work with. You don't really know how much to trust what's coming out of those countries.
Yeah, Kim, doesn't it go back? I mean, look, the market is not taking the uncertainty well, because it's having economic effects, and that companies that are in China that supply a lot of the goods or component parts of things for American manufacturers are closing down, not opening up. So it affects huge chunks of the economy, and people just have question marks because they don't know what's going on. But with China, the question mark is about the government too, right? There are reports now, and I have no idea how true they are, that China may be trying to mask the number of fatalities, right? So, I mean, when there's no trust, it becomes a lot harder to resolve these big questions.
Well, that's right. And it's why look, this goes back to the Pence question. You also see Democrats out there trying to suggest that the president is putting out a message that's, you know, at contrast with those of his scientists, which, by the way, I haven't really seen any evidence of that at all. I mean, their main evidence seems to be that the scientists set up and said, you know, we're expecting this to spread.
Right.
And President Trump set up and said, I don't know, like, maybe it'll get worse. Right. Maybe it'll get better. But sort of on your point that, you know, none of us know this, but that's why it's important to have a Mike Pence, because you do want the message coming out of the government to be one of clarity and transparency so that Americans and traders in the markets can feel confident that what they do know, even if it isn't everything, that what they do know is correct. You know, and I've been a little surprised myself at just the severity of the stock market, you know, slide. And I think it is worth putting everything in a little bit of perspective. Yes, there are going to be some supply chain issues out of China. Yes, there's a possibility that this could disrupt some American businesses. But it's remarkable that even in a time we were watching the market slide again, we had some decent economic news out in reports suggesting that the basic status of the U.S. economy still remains strong in terms of consumer sentiment, in terms of manufacturing. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that at some point traders kind of, you know, stop watching CNN.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. I'm Bill McGurn, and you've been listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.